Saving Thousands is brought to you in part by RP Funding. RP Funding, Inc. is licensed and can offer loans in Alabama, Arkansas, Florida, Kentucky, Louisiana, North Carolina, Ohio, Oklahoma, South Carolina, Tennessee, Texas, Virginia, and West Virginia, and is also licensed by the Mississippi Department of Banking and Consumer Finance and by the Pennsylvania Department of Banking and Securities. Office is located at 500 Winterly Place, Suite 300, Maitland, Florida, 32751. Telephone 321-397-4420. RP Funding's nationwide mortgage licensing system ID number is 70168, Equal Housing Opportunity, and Robert Palmer's NMLS ID number is 76197.
Welcome back, and yes, we are Saving Thousands with Robert Palmer right here on the Saving Thousands Radio Network.
Lou, what is your question?
My question is, if let's say you have lousy credit, but all of a sudden you came into a lot of cash and you would like to buy a house strictly in cash, what problems would you encounter? If you want to buy a house in cash.
And for a couple issues, you know, for the main part, as long as you're not borrowing any part of the purchase price and you're paying 100% cash, your credit, you shouldn't come in too much play. A couple things to watch out for is if you've ever had a judgment filed against you, you know, as a part of having a bad credit, if there's ever been a creditor who was able to sue you and have a judgment placed on you, that judgment can attach to the property automatically. Other than that, you may have some issues getting insurance. You may pay slightly higher insurance rates. But when you're paying all cash, there's really nothing anybody can do to stop you from buying that house, regardless of how bad your credit is. So that shouldn't create any issues for you at all. Have you been told there were issues, or are you just trying to be proactive and find out before you get in the process?
Oh, no, I haven't bought a house yet.
Okay.
All right, I just want to find out what problems I would encounter in case I bought a house in strictly cash.
Yeah, you wouldn't have any issues at all. You know, as a cash buyer, no one has a right to even really look at your credit. The only people, like I said, that might would be the insurance company might take a look at your credit, and bad credit may affect your homeowner's insurance rates. But again, when you pay all cash, it's even your option whether you want to have insurance or not. I would personally recommend it in case a disaster strikes, but that's your call when you pay cash, because there's no mortgage company involved to pull your credit or to dictate the rules to you. So, you know, feel comfortable to go out there with your cash and buy whatever home you'd like.
Again, you'll find similar questions on credit and articles by visiting savingthousands.com. And there's a feature on that site that's updated weekly called Money Minute. Besides this radio show, Robert appears on top radio stations across the country every morning during drive time with the Money Minute. The Money Minutes are yours to play back on demand at savingthousands.com. All right, Robert, let's stay on credit for a minute. There's a lot of creditors out there that are offering their version of our credit score and credit standing. But you and I and our audience knows that it's the FICO score that counts, right?
If someone is giving you a FICO score, it's the real one. They can't make up a fake FICO score, right? What they have to do is, when it's not the FICO score, they have to call it something else. They have to give it some other name. So the key is, when you're tracking your credit score, make sure you're getting the FICO score. And really what that means is, that's the scoring model that was developed by Fair Isaac Corporation, the original company. They've now changed their name to FICO because FICO,
really?
Yeah, they changed it into FICO because that's what everybody knew them as, FICO, mm-hmm. FICO, Fair Isaac Corporation, FICO. So they're now just called FICO. And they changed their name, but they invented this. They built the first scoring model. They are the model that we as lenders trust. And what this model does is, it looks at late payments. It looks at on-time payments. It looks at how old your credit is, how new your credit is.
Yeah.
How old is your oldest account? How new is your newest account? How many late payments have you had? How recent are those late payments, right? A late payment last month is a red flag. A late payment 6 years ago, not so much,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, do you have any collections? Do you have any charge-offs? You know, what's going on in your credit file that they need to be concerned about? And they built this model. It looks at your balances, the percentage you owe on your credit cards compared to your limits. So let's say the limit is $10,000 and you owe $10,100, your over limit on that credit card, that's a big negative factor. If you owe $100 on that credit card and the balance is $10,000, that's a positive factor. Because what it says is, hey, he has the ability to go charge $10,000 and he's not doing it. Right?
Yeah.
You know, someone with maxed out credit cards who's heavily using their credit is a bigger risk than someone who has all these available credit cards and doesn't use them because they have sufficient money in the bank and they have savings and they're more conscious with how they spend money. All those things are reflected in Fair Isaac FICO built the model that looks at all this. Are you shopping for new credit? If all of a sudden, if you know, so right now, Rob, let's say I pay all my bills on time.
Sure.
If tomorrow I go out and buy a Lamborghini, 3 boats, 6 houses, and an airplane, will I be able to make my payments anymore? Probably not. I'd go bankrupt. And so that's what they look at. When you're opening new accounts, when you're opening new debts, it's all about tracking how are you going to be able to handle this. And so when you do open new accounts, they kind of put you in the doghouse for the next 6 months because they want to make sure you're going to be able to handle the new liability. You went from this set of bills, and now you added some new bills, and so you have new payments to make. Let's see if you can absorb them. Do you make enough money? And this is why they don't even care about your income anymore.
Uh-huh.
Because what Fair Isaac and FICO have figured out, if you're paying all of your bills on time and you're not maxing out your credit cards, then you have plenty of income. If your credit cards are all maxed out and you're struggling to pay your bills, then you probably don't have enough income, right? And if you're responsible, if you've been responsible for the last 5 years, this is why age of credit is important, Rob. So if you've been responsible with your credit for the last 5 years,
right?
So every time you get a new account, you pay it on time and you never miss a lick, and you've done that for 5 years or 7 years or 10 years or 15 years, the assumption is you're going to do it again.
Hopefully.
And so when you take out the new account, they're not as nervous because you've shown a 10-year history of never missing a payment. When you're new to credit, you know, if you've never had a car loan before or you've never had a big credit card before and now you're going and applying for a car loan, they're going to be a little more skeptical. So people with newer credit will have lower scores because once you've bought and sold 20 cars and never missed a payment, pretty much the score says this guy knows what he can afford and knows what he can't afford. Where someone who's never bought a car before, that very first car loan is harder to get because you haven't shown that, and even the second car loan. So these are all the crazy things that the Fair Isaac, the FICO formula looks at, and even they can't tell you predictively what's going to make changes because it all happens in real time, and they're comparing you to... So what happens is when someone does start missing payments, they know what happened, what you looked like right before that, right? Because they have your credit history. Mm-hmm. And so they're able to do predictive analysis to figure out what leads up to people to stop missing payments. I'm very fascinated by the science of it. What you need to know as a consumer is make sure you're getting FICO, all right?
We're still saving thousands with Robert Palmer. Let's go to some of our Ask Robert segments right now. We are getting a lot of email. We get a lot of questions. And Robert does get contacted on Facebook. Once you find him, you're asking questions. Okay, have a good one right here. It says, who is Fannie, Freddie, and FHA, and where are they in the whole loan process, and why?
All right, that's actually a really good question. I like that, Rob. Yeah, so here's how this works. And this is kind of crazy, but people think that banks make mortgages with the money they have in their accounts, and they do not. All right. So the way it works is like where a bank is willing to make you a car loan because a car loan has a five year life expectancy.
Sure.
And what happens is you're paying down a car loan. As you get into years like 3, 4, and 5, the balances are low, right? So you start off with a big balance, and then by year 5, you're paid off. So years 4 and 5, the balance is very, very low. So the thing that banks hate, that banks can't have, when the FDIC audits banks, one of the primary things they look at is what's called interest rate risk. Okay, so here's what happens, Rob. So today, we're not getting anything on our checking accounts, right?
Amen.
They're paying us 0.1111 nothing on our checking accounts, right?
Yeah.
And so when you look at that, you say, oh, wow, the bank, they'll give me a car loan at 3.99, you know, but that, you know, that's really low, but they can afford to because they're only paying me 0.1111 on my checking account, right?
Right.
So what happens if 12 months from now, banks have to pay us 4 to 5% on our checking and on our savings accounts, right?
Uh-huh.
I mean, you remember a time, Rob, when savings accounts were paying 10%.
And you got a little trinket with you. You got a toaster.
So, you know, we've been in this situation of stupid low interest rates for so long, a lot of people forget that there was a time when you could get 5-6%, 4-6% on a CD, on a money market, on a savings account. So what happens is all of a sudden the bank has to pay you interest on your money. But guess what? That car loan they made 4 years ago, it's still at 3.99% because they can't go back and renegotiate and change the interest rate, right? And so they would now be losing money. And so the idea is what banks are having to try to project is how long are rates going to be low? And then they have to build an interest rate that pays them profits today but won't lose them very much money when the loan is paid off. So that's very easy to do on a car loan because it's only a 5-year loan, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's easy to do that's why most credit cards are adjustable rates. So as the rates
that's
go
right.
up, the credit card can go up. So along comes the mortgage where consumers want a 30-year fixed rate mortgage.
Anything could happen in 30 years.
Guess what? Banks do not want to own 30-year fixed rate mortgages because bankers are scared to death that they could actually put their bank out of business if they made you a 30-year loan at 3.5%. And then all of a sudden rates in 2 years go to 4%, they would lose money for the next 28 years. Banks can't afford to do that. And right. So the solution was to create a bond-type clearinghouse for mortgages. And this is Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Ginnie Mae. So what happens is even if you go to the biggest bank in the country, they are most likely not going to use their own money to make you that mortgage. Mm-hmm. They're going to turn around and they're going to securitize your mortgage through Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, or Ginnie Mae. Now, during the boom, Wall Street got in on this game too, and Wall Street started securitizing mortgages. So a lot of people have mortgages that are not guaranteed by Fannie or Freddie or Ginnie. Well, they're mm-hmm. still not being made with the bank's money. The bank was securitizing them through Wall Street instead of Fannie, Freddie, and Ginnie. Well, that's all gone now because obviously Wall Street lost so much freaking money with the crisis that they're not interested in securitizing mortgages anymore. But that's the important thing to understand is whether you come to RP Funding, a small lender like us, or you go to the biggest bank on the planet, the money you're being lent is not coming from that institution for the full term. We use interim funding to make the loan, and then we turn around and we securitize it through Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, or Ginnie Mae.
So if it weren't for FHA, Freddie Mac, Ginnie Mae, or USDA, it would be almost impossible to buy a house. Back to questions from you, the listeners. Andrea and John have decided to buy a house, and they're determined to use Saving Thousands rule number one. Always shop around. They want to find the best mortgage for them. Well, then they put on the brakes because the first mortgage company told them that if they shop around, these multiple credit pulls will hurt their scores, Robert.
Yeah, this is what the guy tells you. Who doesn't want you to realize that he has terrible rates and fees, you know? And again, once upon a time, this was, I will call it an error in the programming of the FICO algorithm. Because in their defense, what they thought was happening is they thought you were desperate for credit, right?
Oh, okay.
And so like if I'm trying to get 20 new credit cards, you know, like say I know that my plan is to file bankruptcy or I know I'm about to lose my job, right? Like again, because the whole idea is they're trying to predict behavior. The whole point of FICO is to predict behavior. Mm-hmm. And everybody gets so hung up on that it judges you by your past, which is true. But the point of the algorithm is to predict your behavior. And so what would happen is if people knew they were about to get laid off, or people knew they were going to file bankruptcy soon, or people knew something was going wrong, maybe they just got diagnosed with a terminal illness and they don't think they're going to live much longer, they would go out and get a whole bunch of credit cards and run them up and charge them up and then just keep all the stuff and file bankruptcy or live on the credit cards and they lost their job. This would happen. Mm-hmm. And so the idea was that if you're calling 20 different credit card companies trying to get new credit cards, it's because something bad's about to happen in your life and you know it, but nobody else knows it. And you're trying to load yourself up on credit cards. So they would reduce your credit score because of that, right? Well, that doesn't apply to mortgages. That doesn't apply to car loans. There were certain things that they realized that did not apply to. And so it says on the FICO website that it doesn't work that way anymore, that when you have your credit pulled by multiple mortgage companies, that you're not going to get your credit hit because they understand that smart consumers actually shop around, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's the big thing. You know, shopping for a mortgage, shopping for a car loan is not going to hurt your credit like it used to. And the only people that are going to tell you it is someone who doesn't want you to shop around. Now, what kind of person doesn't want you to shop around? The person who benefits from you not knowing the truth, not understanding what mortgage rates really are, you know, they're going to take advantage of you by preventing you from shopping around.
And how about this, Robert, if we've got the time? By the way, the phone number, 855-773-8634. I hear from people who say that they go down, maybe they're down in some of the newer areas by Disney or something like that, and they're looking for a new home in a model home community, and that model home community almost insists, that would be the builder, almost insists that you have to go with our builder loan company that we own right here. And they don't have to, do they?
No, absolutely not. So here's the deal. I mean, in a lot of cases, the builder is going to want you, in order to pay your closing costs or something, they may require you to use a certain lender to get those closing cost credits. But you should still shop around.
Yeah.
Because if you can save more money than what they're going to give you, mm-hmm. and we've seen deals where this is the case. The builder, gives you $3,000 in upgrades, but then the mortgage company overcharges you by $6,000. Well, guess what? You'd still be better to use us. You're going to come ahead $3,000 net to the good. The only way to know that, all right, the only way to know that is to shop around, okay? You have to call multiple companies, all right? And so that's the big thing. So I just pulled up myfico.com, Rob. We talked about FICO earlier in the show. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of frequently asked questions on here about what we're talking about.
Yeah.
So, you know, one it says is, does the formula treat all credit inquiries the same, right? And so it says, research indicates that FICO scores are more predictive when they treat loans that commonly involve rate shopping, such as a mortgage, auto, and student loan, in a different way. For these types of loans, FICO scores ignore inquiries made in the 30 days prior to the scoring. So if you find a home loan within 30 days, the inquiry won't affect your scores while you're shopping. In addition, FICO scores look on your credit report for rate shopping inquiries older than 30 days. If your FICO score finds some, your score will be considered inquiries that fall in a typical shopping period as just one inquiry. Okay, so older versions of FICO would only group them in a 14-day span. Now they're looking back 30 days, and if they see a bunch of them at once, they're still going to ignore them even if they're past 30 days because they know you were shopping for a loan. So that's the big thing. FICO wants you to rate shop. You know, and if you're looking for a mortgage, auto, or student loans, it may cause multiple lenders to crash your credit report, even though they're looking for one loan. To compensate for this, FICO scores ignore mortgage, auto, and student loan inquiries made in the 30 days prior to your scoring, right? This is all right on myfico.com. So it's actually under two sections. One's under, does the formula treat all credit inquiries the same? It's also under what to know about rate shopping, right? They've also got some great tips on here about how to improve your FICO scores. And all that is on myfico.com under credit checks and inquiries. So, you know, again, you don't just have to take my word for it. It's right there. Mm-hmm. And any company who tells you not to shop around, don't talk to any of my competitors, right? It's going to drop your credit score. Sure it is, buddy. Yeah. You know, you run. Just know what that's all about. You know, and I will promise you, no one here will ever tell you that. And if they do, I'll fire them on the spot.
Right.
If I ever hear that one of my loan officers told somebody not to have their credit pulled by a competitor because it would drop their score, because it's a big load of malarkey.
So another urban myth disproven. When you're shopping for a mortgage to buy something costing $150,000 or more, every fee, interest rate fluctuation, and all that will cost you major dollars. Again, use Saving Thousands rule number one, always shop around, especially when it comes to a mortgage. But it'll work for you with almost every purchase. Your copy of the 15 Saving Thousands Rules to Success can be found at savingthousands.com on the web. We have time for one more question from the audience, Robert, getting into our final segment of the show. Clark wants to know the financial formula he would use to see if getting a refi is a good idea today. So, Robert?
Yeah, Rob, the most important thing people have to understand is when is it beneficial to refinance, right? Mm-hmm. There's all these urban legends and myths and old wives' tales, and my personal favorite is this is one that was perpetrated by the big banks, and they tell people you shouldn't refinance your mortgage unless you can save 2%.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Now, first off, I want to put this in perspective, and when this came about, interest rates were like 17 or 18%. So, yeah, if the rate's that high, you've got to save 2% to make a difference because rates are so high. You know, that's cutting your interest by about 10% of what it is.
Yeah.
Well, now that rates are so low, if your rate's at 6, cutting it by 10% will be going down to 5.4, right? So the same proportion of drop is just not there. The other thing is the banks, they don't want you to refinance. You know, if you're paying them 6% today,
yeah,
why would they want you to pay 4%, right? That's how they make their money. It doesn't make any sense. So many people get hung up on this idea of, well, I have to save X percent or it's not worth it to refinance. All right, so that's not the case at all. So what I want to walk people through today is how to do the calculation, all right? Because it's different for everybody. It's absolutely different for everybody. How to do the calculation of how much you're going to save. So the first thing you need to figure out is what are the upfront costs of the mortgage loan?
Right.
Okay. So that's the first thing we have to know. There's three things that go into this equation. The upfront costs on the mortgage loan, the monthly savings from the refinance, and the amount of time you're going to be in that home.
Mm-hmm.
So number one is let's look at those upfront costs. Now, some lenders out there, they charge crazy amounts of lender fees. You could end up paying $4,000, $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 on the cost of a refinance. Whatever that cost is will be given to you by your lender on what's called a good faith estimate or some companies use a form called an initial fee worksheet. Either way, you need to know how much those closing costs are. Mm-hmm. In the state of Florida, we have intangible tax, we have dock stamps, we have title insurance. All of these costs play in, and then you add in any lender fees the lender's charging, and these are the upfront costs. Now, what is not a cost, but will also be listed on the sheet, is the amount of money needed to establish your escrow account. So what happens is, Rob, when you have an escrow account, the lender is going to pay your taxes and insurance for you annually. So they have to have enough money in the account to pay that. Sure. So if you refinance your mortgage in March and your first payment is due in May and your taxes are due in November, you're going to make a May payment, a June payment, a July payment, an August payment, a September payment, an October payment, and then boom, the taxes are due in November, right?
Wow, yeah.
So you're only going to have made 6 payments, but they've got to pay 12 months worth of taxes. So what happens is they have to get the difference from you up front.
Yes.
All right. So that's establishing your escrow account. Now, this is not a cost, because what happens is your old lender has to send you a check for any money left in your old escrow account. So this is a wash. So when you're determining the cost of the mortgage loan, you take the good faith estimate or the fees worksheet and you deduct the amount of money being collected for homeowners insurance, escrow, and tax escrow. And this is going to leave you with the cost of the loan. So then you want to write that number down. It could be $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000. It may be zero. Whatever that number is, you need to write that down. The next thing you need to look at is, what is your monthly savings? Okay. Now, this can be a little tough too. It's not just about payment savings. All right. If you have 28 years left on your mortgage mm-hmm. and you refinance to a 30-year fixed, you're going back 2 years. Yeah. So the payment's going to naturally be a little lower because you've added 2 years on to the tail end of the mortgage. So what you have to actually look at is, how much interest are you saving every payment?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Not the total payment savings, because the total payment savings, if you go from a 20-year to a 15-year, the payments can actually go up, but you're still saving money in interest. So you need to know what that interest savings is. So the way you do this is, you take your loan amount, all right, and you multiply it by your old interest rate. So a $100,000 loan, if I was at 6%, I was going to pay $6,000 in interest that year. If I take a $100,000 loan times 4%, I'm going to pay $4,000 in interest, right? That's the difference.
Mm-hmm.
So you calculate the difference between that two. So that difference is $2,000. Divide that by 12, and that's your monthly savings. Or just look at it as a yearly number. I'm going to save $2,000 the first year. It costs me $4,000 in upfront costs. Therefore, it will take me 2 years to break even on this refinance loan. If I'm going to sell the house in 12 months, bad deal. If I'm going to sell the house in 24 months, I break even, but who wants to get a mortgage just to break even? Bad deal. If I'm going to be in that house for 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years, now I can really save some money. So you have to look at those two numbers compared to each other. You take the upfront costs compared to the yearly savings, see how many years it's going to take you to make up the difference and start saving money, and then think about how many years you're going to be in that house. Because there are some people out there, if they're getting a loan with no costs and they're dropping the rate, just say 0.25%, that's still 0.25% in pure savings. If you go from a 4.25% to a 4% rate with no costs on a $200,000 loan, that's roughly $500 a year in savings. If you're going to be in your house for 10 years, you can save a lot of money that way.
Yeah.
So don't think of any rule of thumb. There is no old wives' tale of, oh, it's got to be X percent of a drop. It's got to be something that makes sense for your financial situation. And if you're going to leave that house in the next 12 months, there is no number that makes financial sense. If you're only a couple years away from paying that mortgage off, there is no number that makes financial sense, right? But if you're going to be in that house for the next 30 years and there's not very much in upfront costs, it doesn't take hardly any savings at all to make it make sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's a purely financial decision to make. It's upfront costs divided by yearly savings equals years to recoup the costs and then years to start saving. That's all you've got to look at.
Thank you, Robert Palmer. That brings us to the end of the show, but there's more empowering information at the website I mentioned, savingthousands.com. And you can always hear full versions of this show, the Saving Thousands radio show, by accessing Robert's exclusive station on the iHeartRadio app. With all of this information working for you and all of us caring for you, we'll all save thousands with Robert Palmer.